about it.
Welcome to the Lindley Evans Music Studio at the ABC in Ultimo for another edition of Thank God It's Friday. I'm Richard Glover, and this week, singer-songwriter and frontman of the Whitlams, it's Tim Friedman. And our panel, Subby Valentine, Tommy Dean and Jackie Loeb, please welcome them. But first, here is the news from nowhere. 10% of Australians, according to an article the other day, believe the world will come to an end on December 21st this year, the date suggested by the ancient Mayan calendar. This means we're only about 6 weeks off Armageddon. Yikes. Now, lots of people say the doomsayers are mad, but I'm not so sure. It seems to me that certain things are on a trajectory at the moment. It's hard to see how they can go on this way. The end of days? Actually, the signs are all around us. Gina Reinhart's wealth, growing at the rate of $600 a second, will eventually allow her to buy everything. In a week's time, she will purchase a new sheep and cattle farm, but keep the traditional name, Victoria. By the end of the month, she will buy Greece and Spain. By December 20, she'll have so much money, she'll give her kids 10 bucks. The end of times. In fashion, we will run out of periods to revive. The 70s, 80s and 90s have all been done. Periods that have only just ended will be revived. By the end of November, they'll be reviving October. By December 19, they'll be reviving December 18. By December 20, we'll be one pedal pusher away from the apocalypse. Tony Abbott grows angrier by the day. The past 3 weeks, he's been boiling with rage, aghast that despite everything, she is still occupying the lodge. How can that be? At the current exponential rate of rage acceleration, Tony Abbott will explode sometime around November 20. Malcolm Turnbull, splattered with body parts, will somehow find it within himself to resume his role as Liberal leader. On the Labor side, so many documents will have been removed from Craig Thompson's Bateau Bay home, a vacuum will be created which will suck in all the other members of the Central Coast Labor Party, right up to Belinda Neal, who will be flying through the air like Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, yelling, "Don't you know who I am?" as she is sucked through the front door. Having excised Australia from its own migration zone, they'll excise Vaucluse from the taxation zone. Rich people don't like paying tax anyway. Then excise Nauru from the compassion zone. And then excise James Packer from the need to get permission before doing anything you want zone. November 10. In the effort to get rid of anything that might help asylum seekers, Julia Gillard will excise the southern portions of Bob Brown and all of the Frank Brennan. Following the US election, a new law will be passed by the US Congress restricting the presidency to those whose names sound like IKEA storage solutions. The bill will be sponsored by Mitt, Newt and Barrack. Hollywood, meanwhile, will collapse after executives realise they have run out of Marvel Comics to remake The End of Times. English will become so laden with words that don't mean what people think they mean, language itself will literally cease to exist, with speakers disinterested in ever saying it, which would be ironic, except the word ironic hardly means what people think it means. The number of TV talent shows will continue to grow until every Australian is a contestant in at least one program, all of us appearing on the same night. The lack of anyone at home to vote will create a financial tsunami, destroying much of the Australian stock market. Miniaturisation will proceed at such a pace that within months, smartphones, laptops and iPods will become so small they will literally cease to exist. People will reach into their pockets, search around and realise there's nothing there. All the world's communications will cease, save for small amounts of face-to-face grunting. Office workers will spend increasing amounts of time dealing with their emails each morning, up to the point that they are still at it at 5 p.m. each day, deleting unwanted messages about the routine maintenance shutdown of the air conditioning in the Brunswick sub-office, and will thus be unable to achieve any actual office work at all. The impact, if any, remains unclear. Ireland will be closed after it is revealed the entire population is overseas touring in Riverdance. On November 10, reality TV, after a decade of each show being more tasteless and objectionable than the last, will finally reach the lowest level possible after a Dutch show presents cannibalism in a ready, steady, cook format. It'll become a worldwide hit. Producers, no longer able to undercut each other in terms of taste, will leave the industry and TV itself will cease to exist. The citizenry, left unoccupied for hours each evening, will turn to civil disobedience and rioting and looting will grip the world's major cities. The end of days. And finally, the Volvo smart car, which already can park itself, will become self-aware. Somewhere around December. Running down non-Volvo drivers, leaving the world populated only by Volvo drivers, who almost by definition will find themselves unable to breed. So will the end of days come on December 21? I remain uncertain, ladies and gentlemen. All I'm saying is that things can hardly go on as they are. And that's the news from nowhere. Well, some grim thoughts there, but to make us see the world in a more sunny way, Subby Valentine, Tommy Dean and Jackie Loeb, welcome.
Thank you.
Just so you know, my wedding anniversary is December 21st, so I am going to use that as my excuse on December 22nd for not having a present. Seemed foolish to waste the money, honey.
Since the world is ending anyway. Exactly. Now, let's find out if you've been paying enough attention to this week's news. Which country, as I alluded to, is getting smaller by the moment?
So in other words, does it mean what you think it means? I think you said directly.
Yeah, I didn't know.
No illusions at all.
Yeah, it's getting smaller by the minute.
Directly. I think this is the idea, of course, that the government continues to remove parts of Australia to avoid laws that might affect parts of Australia, such that either Australia or laws must cease to exist.
It's the incredible shrinking Australia.
Yeah,
it's a great way of running the country. Just make things disappear when you don't want them, isn't it? Just go, Minister of Immigration, David Copperfield, look at that. And Australia's just gone. It's just like, it's a bizarre system.
It's the same idea. Like right now, of course, the new laws have come into effect that if you're caught holding your mobile phone in a car, you're in very big trouble. But when you get pulled over, oh no, this is my talkie box. There's no law that refers to talkie box.
Yeah.
Only the mobile phone is a problem. Talkie box, fine.
That's when they keep closing down all the Medicares on the North Shore. They just disappear. Every week another one falls victim. They're just gone. Just an observation. a geographic observation that things keep moving.
It's kind of weird being a refugee now. It's like being on The Amazing Race because you think you're here and then they go, no, you're not. Here's your next clue. And they've got to keep going. Like, it's not really...
Well, why don't they just tow the whole place south to Antarctica, make it harder?
Even just change the name on the paper. Someone arrives and goes, congratulations, you're now a citizen of Austria. Yeah. Well done. Yeah.
Welcome to Canada.
Yeah, that's right. Just change it. It's bizarre.
Do you think if Captain Cook sailed into view, he'd find anything here at all?
That's right, yeah. It could just be totally...
Just sail right
totally
through. Now, what's the... who's found some spare change just when they thought they were broke?
I love that feeling. I so can relate to that feeling, like, you know, when you're at the RSL club, as I'm sure you frequent on a regular basis, as I do, and you're playing the poker machines, as you do when you get your paycheck, and you've put your entire mortgage and shopping and private school fees in there, and then you think, oh, my God, I've got to declare bankruptcy, and you discover that one unaccounted for gold shiny dollar coin on the bottom of the tray, and it's an amazing feeling because it's like, well, what do I do with this dollar coin? If I say it was the New South Wales state government, do I put it back in the machine and blow the budget, or do I invest it and put it back into healthcare? And what I propose, what I think the New South Wales state government should do, this is what I'm trying to say here, I will get to the point, is to install state-of-the-art poker machines in all New South Wales hospitals. I think it's really, really important. And what patients could do is they could set betting limits on mandatory pre-commitment machines to make sure they can still pay the Medicare gap. I think it's a really, really good idea.
Who's paid a Medicare gap recently?
The doctors on the North Shore, I'm telling you.
Okay, but this is a story about the New South Wales government. It has found $1 billion. The Auditor General has located $1 billion they didn't know they had.
If they're going to reinvest the money, they need to reinvest it in accountancy skills.
Clearly. They're sacking the wrong people. They're sacking health workers. Yeah, sack the accountants. They're the ones that don't know what they're doing.
They've found 37 errors of $20 million or more.
How do these people...
Like, but do they? But did they get to the point where now I'm starting to think that maybe a second band of accountants come in and fix it Like, maybe it was totally right the first time, and it looked terrible on paper. They went, oh, no, tick, 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 tick. Look at that, you got a billion. Yeah. And then we'll all be happy for a little while. They'll come back along and go, tick, 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 tick. Oh, it's only actually 500 million. Oh, sorry. Tick, 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 tick. Oh, look, this isn't even our money because this country doesn't exist.
We've excised New South Wales from the budget zone.
Very, very odd. I don't know. I mean, if you've got accountants who can't count, isn't that like, they should be good. That's like radio announcers who can't speak or...
There's what?
Politicians who can't lie. It doesn't fit. You know, they're in the wrong gig, surely.
Maybe they just don't know how to use the calculators on their smartphones.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. I think it's too much. I think we're expecting too much. I think for long I've argued that, you know, money already is a fantasy construct, really. Mm-hmm. We make it work for us the way we want it to work. How can the Australian dollar just a few years ago be only worth 50 cents and now it's worth a dollar? That makes no sense.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing changed. Yeah. It still cost me $5 for a coffee. But apparently my coffee now costs me twice as much if I came from America. Money makes no sense. In fact, apparently, I was just reading, in accountancy in America, we didn't even pay for the war. We just put a little note, eventually. It's not even on the books. Billions and we lost how many billions of dollars? We shipped like X billions of dollars in actual cash to a war zone, and it just disappeared.
Well, Australia, through the wool board, actually gave it to Saddam Hussein, so at least we knew where it was going. What's the new technique for those of us who are too scared to diet?
I love this. This is fantastic. This is, I don't know if you saw this story, but apparently if you watch scary movies, because you get a bit freaked out, you burn calories, apparently.
Your heart starts
going. Because you start freaking out. So if you're watching The Shining, The Exorcist, or YouTube footage of Tony Abbott and Speedos, you can... You can just burn off calories. It actually concerns me, Richard, you know, as the skinny man that I am. It means every time I watch a scary movie, I've got to eat like 2 litres of ice cream just so I don't waste away.
They came up with this with the University of Westminster. They you know, got volunteers and they wired them up. The Shining, they lost 184 calories. Jaws, they lost 161 calories. The Exorcist, 158 calories. Yeah. This is more, you lose more sitting on the couch watching these movies than you would going for a brisk walk for the same amount of time.
It surprises me that Jaws burnt less calories because I thought seafood was supposed to be better for you.
Actually, according to the University of Google, anger actually burns more calories than fear, which means you can lose a dress size, you can drop a dress size in a week just by watching Today Tonight. So that's quite a good statistic. Also, there's such a thing, because you said, for those that aren't willing to exercise or make any sacrifices when it comes to food, there's such a thing as I Googled this, negative calories. So, for example, did you know that you can actually burn 7 calories just by eating a sour cucumber? 7 calories, which means...
So it's negative calorie. The more of it you eat...
That's right. Yeah. So if you say, for example, for dinner, like this is my dinner, if you wanted to have like a Big Mac and a side of KFC nuggets on a bed of Pizza Hut Meat Lover's Pizza, all you have to do is eat 87,300 pickles and you like have a clean slate to work with the next day. It's great.
You'll be fine.
Is that how McDonald's is adjusting their calorie charts? That little pickle
now,
on the burger that's
why they have the
pickles.
That's why they have the pickles.
Accountancy is a lie!
There has to be some reason for those pickles because it's not taste. Now, what about other movies? You know, it strikes me, you water retention problems. You could watch The Notebook and weep your way to a drier state. Some movies would cause you to throw up.
That's what I think with slasher films. You've watched enough, you know, gory. It's not just that you would lose a few calories by being scared by the slasher film, but it would put you off dinner. So you wouldn't even eat that night. That'd be nice. Ooh, can't have that.
I know what could induce vomiting. What about like a Meg Ryan romantic comedy, something like that? Those romantic comedy genres that are a bit saccharine sweet and a bit revolting.
Because I get the same. Like if I watched, my children made me watch the Justin Bieber in 3D and I was so tense.
I put on weight watching that actually.
That was terrible. That
we
was
have terrible. Subby Valentine, Tommy Dean and Jackie Loeb. We also have Tim Friedman, ladies and gentlemen. Tim's playing The Vanguard on the 15th of November. That show's sold out, but he's on Lazotte's at DY the next night on the 16th. And then the Christmas shows, which he's done quite recently, the last few years at The Basement, the 26th and 27th. Tim Friedman, why do you do the Christmas shows all the time?
I find you get people in town between Christmas and New Year that you don't normally get, like fathers coming with their... You know, kids from England, and it's always been a very festive night. Renee Gay has done it.
There must be a wider market than people from England with kids. You're not going to fill the place with them.
Well, I think people are just in a good mood between Christmas and New Year. I've always had a blast. I've done it about 5 years in a row.
Yeah. And I think Renee Geyer does a little bit too, doesn't she?
She's done it for, well, I think, 8 years. So it's just the Tim and Renee festival at the basement every year.
I know you're gonna do a song about older couples, and it made me think of the Whitlams and whether you'd actually met the real characters, whether you'd met Gough and Margaret.
They've always been really gracious to me, and I was lucky enough to spend some time.
When Gough, like stealing their name for your band.
Yeah, well, people were sent along to make sure that we were using it out of respect, and we passed the test. And when Gough became immobile, I actually took Margaret out to concerts a bit, you know, to the Australian Chamber Orchestra and stuff. But Gough was a little bit funny about this.
A younger man squiring his wife.
Yes, he'd say, oh, maybe I should get myself a young girlfriend. And Margaret would say, shut up, you silly old fool. She was the only one that could ever speak to him like that. And she did so quite often.
Yeah. They were such an amazing couple, weren't they?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I always felt honoured when I was just even, you know, having a cup of tea.
Now, tell us about the song you're going to sing.
How about I play it?
Yeah, play it. Live on TJF.
I guess you had to be there, she said, you had to be. She handed me a yellow photograph and said, see, I'm told.
You know, no aphrodisiac and things. So compelling melodies. Do the melodies come to you when you're actually sitting at the piano doodling, or do they come into your head when you're sitting on the bus?
No, I don't have a line to God like Mozart. I've got to sit at the piano, I'm afraid.
And that's when it happens. And how do you come up, you know, what's the process?
I try and write the words and the music at the same time. I find that they end up being better songs. But you know, you've got to be open to anything. You know, you can always look through your old coats
when
for coasters.
No, aphrodisiac or whatever example. When you're sitting there, and is it a process that takes all day or a process that takes half an hour or what?
Well, hopefully half an hour so you can go to the beach. No, aphrodisiac just took about 20 minutes late one night.
Is that right?
But I've taken a year to write a song as well. But when they come quickly, you feel really lucky, and then you go to the beach.
That's a kill.
You mismatch them. Like when you started that, maybe you had the lyrics for that. It was a very sentimental look back, but maybe you accidentally set it to, you know, like a rag.
No, I just hit the D minor and went, a letter to you. But it was different because my friend Chris Abrahams was upstairs asleep and I was trying to be quiet. So originally the lyrics were actually, there's no aphrodisiac like loneliness, Chris Abrahams and a bottle of scotch. But I didn't think that sounded very commercial, so I changed it to Truth and Beauty and ripped off Keats a bit later.
And you, it's a fantastic melody. That's such a, instantly you hear it, it's a hook, and it sort of tumbles you into an emotion. Do you know at the time that it's going to be that compelling? Do you know straight away?
I don't know. I think you hope so, but you're often wrong.
Yeah, yeah. So every song is going to be a number one hit, and one of them is every few years.
Well, you try and like them because you've got to play them so much and listen to them 1,000 times in the studio. But I'm starting to discard more than I used to. I think you get a little bit pickier.
Yeah.
But
whatever the process is, it's
don't make me blush.
Some producer miracles, some musical miracles. Please thank Tim
Freeman. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
The ABC theme as rendered by Subby Valentine, Tommy Dean and Jackie Loeber are with us. Now, we had a lesson in etiquette this week on the radio. Apparently in Jane Austen's time, it was bad etiquette to compliment a woman on her dress because you should just assume she'd be well-dressed, and by complimenting her, there's the implied possibility that sometimes she doesn't look good. How dare you, you cad, she would say. Greetings, compliments and table manners. Which bits of etiquette do you support and which bits do you simply not get? Subby.
I'm a big fan of your standard greeting. You, hello, how are you? I'm well. Good. How are you? Good. You know, old school. Mm-hmm. I don't like the people coming up with different things, variations, freaking me out. How's it hanging? I don't know. What are you supposed to say to that? A little bit to the left? I don't understand. well, it's hanging well. I don't know. What response are you trying to get out of someone when you say that? This one's really... Here's one. I had a brother-in-law who used to drive me out the wall and he would have heard this one. G'day, mate. Yeah. What do you know? And I know a lot. But will I just start with the A's and work through geography? Where do you want... You know, and you always end up just going, oh, not much. But I don't. I know heaps.
Yeah, and that can affect your self-esteem over time.
I don't know. I don't know anything. God, what's happened to me? So I don't like that. And newfangled one, the youth. Don't get me started on the youth. I was with a guy recently, another old bloke, and this young comedian came up to him and he goes, what's crackin', fool? What does that even mean? What are you... accusing someone of having a mental problem? That's not right. Just as a greeting, that's a bit wrong. So that's the things with your... Now, compliment. I kind of agree with this thing about the compliments, saying about, you know, because if you do, and people would fall into this trap of saying, the trick is don't say, you know, like, you look good today. And you'll hear that all the time at work. Someone go, oh, you look really nice today, which indicates they look like crap normally. And it's by
contrast to your usual freakish appearance.
I think it's inferred. So you've got to be a little bit careful with what you say. So I'm, and similarly, some people just make observations rather than a compliment, just going, got a haircut, did you? I hate that. Yes, I do. Everyone gets them, except Tommy, but everyone else. Everyone gets haircuts.
Makes me angry. As a matter of fact, I had a haircut. The clean square. That's the indicator right there. Clean square.
Actually, and
on
your neck is very. Neck is shaved. Yeah, neck shaved very nicely.
Nobody notices.
Get a haircut, did you, mate? I do. I just noticed. So that's that one.
But then you get to say the fun one there. Yeah, no, mate. Got them all cut.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But all those. I think compliments fantastic. I'm a big fan of complimenting women. The trick with complimenting women is like, you know, saying you look good. Don't be anatomically specific. Yeah. That's what
just
you don't
want to
say.
General good.
General good. You look well. That's a nice dress. Huh. Not that's a nice dress. Really accentuate your breasts. That's what you don't want to. You don't want to get into that. Gee, those jeans really hug you. You don't want to get into that territory.
Well, I'm taking notes.
Yeah, that's. Sorry. That's when you can get
into
sexual...
I'm now seeing where I've been going wrong.
Sexual harassment gear. Just, you look nice, and just stop.
When people say, how are you, do you think you're meant to respond?
Oh, no, I'm that's... Not, when people so do well. Respond that way, yeah.
Actually, a bit of sciatica, mate. And you go, look, I'm just... You're supposed to say good, and I say, let's just cut it out.
We don't want the full organ.
You don't want anything. You just want good. That's what you want.
The kidneys are not good.
How are you? Well, shut up. That's it. Just, no, you don't understand the transaction.
You hang it out there generic so that the answer can be, if they, you know, they can take it any way they want. Like, my favorite is how's things?
Yeah.
How's things? You know, I can choose to respond to that or not respond to that. Or then if I just say, I think they're good.
Yeah, that's right.
And people are happy with that?
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it meant to be a full assessment of the state of the planet? You know, global warming?
But the worst luck is when they actually do answer and you were actually just prepared for the standard, you know, serve and volley.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how you going? And then they start to say, well, you know, I just found out I had cancer. And that's good. Oh, wait. I didn't hear.
Yeah, I'm well too. Thanks for asking. Oh, hang on.
It's like when you go to the bank and the person, the teller says, how can I help you? And you know they can't bloody help you, but you humour them.
Well, you throw back, like, the thing the travel agent will be like, you know, as he finalises your tickets, well, have a great trip. You too. Oh, that's the wrong answer. Yeah. I can't say that to him. Yeah. What have I done?
He's not going anywhere. Are you into etiquette?
Well, I think when it comes to complimenting women, as a woman, my advice is don't engage with women. Stay away from them. They're a bad gender. If you say the wrong thing, you're likely to lose a limb. So, and when it comes to complimenting, like, you have to remember with women, things are always open to interpretation. So, for example, my friend Janine, if I say to Janine, Janine, you've lost weight, this is how Janine hears it. I've lost weight, but I used to look like a morbidly obese, flesh-eating cannibal. Janine, your skin has improved. My skin has improved, but I once looked like a shriveled-up witch who poisons kittens and eats babies. Janine, you look positively glowing. I look glowing. I look radioactive. And telling a single woman that the right man is just around the corner implies that she looks like a sex worker, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Telling a woman her Botox looks really, really subtle suggests she looks like Joan Rivers. Telling a woman her breast implants look natural suggests she looks like Dolly Parton. And finally, telling a woman she is smart is the same as telling a woman she is bloody ugly. So it's best not to engage. Just talk
to you cannot compliment Jackie Loeb, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank God It's Friday with
Subby Tommy and Jackie Loeb. Now, it is now time, of course, for
the wheel of death.
I would like it if you would say, Tommy, would you please do the wheel of death?
Tommy, would you please do the wheel of death?
Well, yes, I'd love to. Thank you for asking.
Now, as regular listeners know, what happens here is that when our wonderful audience comes in at the beginning of the program, they throw random topics on this chocolate wheel. This week's topics, given at random by our audience here, Halloween, cockroaches, pregnancy, old age, sex after death, naturally comic tomic. Thank you to Jimmy Savile for that one. Pot plants, I didn't know he was here. Cheese making, pigeons, operations, Mandarin exams. The eating or the language? Bad deficits. Oh, yeah, the deficit and the surplus. Speaking elephants, as detailed by Helen in the news.
Sandy.
Oh, yes, the hurricane. Sandy. Rubber gloves. And we're back to Halloween. Which are any of those topics you want?
Personally, I'd love to have a crack at speaking elephants, just to imagine the things they'd like to say.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty keen on cheese making. It's close to my heart.
Which one do you least want?
I least want sex after death.
Round and round and round it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. The wheel of death. Tommy Dean to speak for about 3 minutes, hopefully amusing us on the topic of...
No!
Who suggested sex after death? Who suggested it? All right, you get a copy of Dumb, Drunk and Racist, the ABC series for your efforts.
Tommy. Speaking of sex after death and who I will probably be having it with, it's important to note that Dumb, Drunk and Racist was series produced by my wife. My wife made Dumb, Drunk and Racist. So there you go right there. Mm.
Does she base all her work on the family? All right, 3 minutes. True. Tommy Dean on the naturally comic subject of sex after death.
Well, you know, that's for so long. I think it's nice to bring this topic up because I think for so long, so many people have a fear of their own mortality because we're not really sure what we're going to do in the afterlife. But with this idea, if we actually get it into our heads that for all of eternity after we leave, that we will be having sex in the afterlife, who doesn't want to die now? In fact, sometimes I think we're already keen to the idea that it's going to happen, and that's why I went on those long nights of a summer pub crawl where a young man is trying so desperately to meet a woman that he can enjoy the pleasures of throughout an Australian evening. And then by the nighttime, there's no chance left for him. Where does he end up? At the local kebab hut. And surely as he eats kebab after kebab, that's just another way of saying, I want to die now. Between the sauces and the meats that are involved in that thing, surely. I also think we've overlooked, this could be an exciting topic that will gain even more prevalence if, through the horror of horrors, Mr. Mitchewis Romney is elected president in the United States there, because you may not be aware that for many years the Mormons actually promote the fact that if you reach the highest echelon of heaven, you will indeed spend your time having sex after death. Because every single spirit baby that you make with your outrageous heavenly sex then becomes the people we are on the planet that you own, being your very own god. How exciting is that? It's not just sex. It's an entire planet of babies you get to play with. You get to create your very own creche. Problem, of course, is with all sexual, you have to account for time in between. You can't just eternally have sex. There has to be some time in between. And, of course, with eternity, you have to face the topic of what will you talk about. But I save that for the subject of another death of wheel. A wheel of death.
Tommy Dean! Tommy Dean, the wheel of death. Does he survive today? Gladiator time. Does he survive? Does he get thrown to the lions? Hey, survives! Thank goodness for that.
Yeah. It's very exciting that he got the one that he least wanted.
It was
very
exciting.
But I probably should have been more clear up front. I was trying to get to the fact that, you know, it's sex after death where both people are dead. That's what we're being very clear about. Yeah. I want to be very clear that in my speech, implied that everyone was dead.
That's right, yes.
So is that true?
No complaints.
Is that true about the Mormons?
That's very true.
Okay.
Well, that's
but it's only if you're at the highest level.
Yeah, there's basically a very quick paraphrase of the Mormon religion in their heaven structure. There's three levels of heaven, and the very highest level of heaven has three more levels, and if you get to the penthouse, basically, of heaven, then you become a god and you get your own planet and all of your many wives, because polygamy still exists in heaven, and you make your spirit babies, and that's what we are. Our god, as they see it, used to live on a planet much like us, and he attained the penthouse, and we're all his children. Wow. And now we're all always competing, like Gina Reinhardt's children, to get the trust fund back.
Sounds like Amway.
It does.
Or World of Warcraft with the different levels, you know.
It's very low, because they don't believe, and there's no, technically there's no hell, it's just outer darkness.
Or a Democrat administration, whichever you prefer. Now, it's again time for Movember, the first and perhaps best of the rhyme-related month-based fundraising initiatives. Dry July is already taken, so what new ones would you like to see next year? Jackie Loeb.
Okay, well, I've come up with a precursor to Dry July that encourages liver damage, where young people get drunk and expose their re-ends to unsuspecting strangers. I call it Moon in June. I also propose a month that raises money for hairy women with limited funds in dire need of a Brazilian. I call it Fanuary January. It's a rude one. That was rude. A month that encourages people to embrace carbohydrates, to raise their glycemic levels and to gorge on pasta, bread, cakes and rice. I call it Starch March. And finally, Septictember, whereby for 1 month we pull the chain. Septictember is a month where we don't care about the environment and saving water. We just say yes to flushing and we make all that bad smelly stuff just go away.
Subby Valentine, what rhyme-based fundraising initiatives have you?
Now, before we go any further, just I want to point out to everyone, I've been directed to do puns, okay? So no groaning, you know.
Blame me.
That's right.
Direct
you know,
the heat
I'm
onto
just
me.
Doing as told. I know someone's going to groan at something I say. Just, you know, get with the program. Just go along with it. I'm doing my best over here. You know, they're puns. We all know it. Come on. It's the ABC. Puns.
Govember.
Hovember.
Hey, stop! Still, you've already stolen one.
You've already stolen one. November.
People will sunbake ironically to raise money for skin cancer in Tanuary. very good there. Or alternative sweet treats for diabetes awareness in Flanuary. Yeah, okay. We've got
geeks will go old school and start playing games with interconnected computers again in Lanuary.
Lan. Another month where people wear cloaks and other similar items is an opera fundraiser. That's Cape Rule. A month raising awareness of the funeral industry and the people who deal with death every day. That's Morgust. See what I've done there? It's like August with an M. A month celebrating... I quite like this one. I think this one's actually...
joke could be part of more.
That's right. I think this one's actually quite good. A month of celebrating things made of wood, wooden trinkets for sale, wooden briefcases, exactly, et cetera, that sort of stuff. That's September. See? That's not bad. Yeah, I quite like around, that one. Yeah. I think it deserved more. And finally, a month for... because they're all health-related, for bottom health. That's Proctober.
Subby Valentine, ladies and gentlemen. He's here all week. Tommy Dean.
Well, that was a celebration of all the good things that the citizens of the United States have brought to Australia. You would celebrate that in September. Maybe think of that over there. But today, because for those of you that follow the show over the years will know that when Movember comes up, so does this question. I think between us, we've written about 900 jokes. So this time I wanted to focus it because November...
But we're going to publish a best of in the year 2050.
because Movember, of course, celebrates men's health. And as it has expanded, like when I first encountered it, I thought it was always about prostate cancer.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Prostate cancer was the main driving force.
Which is a weird place for a mustache, let's be frank.
That's what I mean. And unfortunately... Sorry, I seen the handlebars. That tickles when I walk. Unfortunately, a friend of mine and a good friend of ours in the comedy community was last year diagnosed with prostate cancer. So knowing him and the things that he has gone through, I think there's other ways that November could be celebrated to remind men at a manly level that this is a concern that we need to deal with quite seriously. So we could have, say, Bovember, which remind you that if you don't get it checked, that's exactly the shape that your intestines are going to be tied into because you won't be allowed to use them anymore. Get yourself checked. You could have Stovember. remind you that that's how you're going to have to pack up all your filth if you don't realize that you got to keep the Flovember going by having yourself changed. There's Tovember, where you drive around all day with a giant caravan, not going as fast as you can and upsetting everybody else trying to get around you, because that's what it's like to haul a giant tumor in your arse the entire time. Tovember will remind you to get yourself checked.
What about Grovember?
Yeah, wow.
What about Grovember when you're prostate enlarges?
Yeah, exactly, Grovember. And then, of course, to end it, if you're not careful, if you don't get yourself checked, I, of course, want to celebrate Crovember, because if you don't get yourself checked, you may find yourself diagnosed with this problem, and you will spend your time saying,
The Graham Kennedy lives, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank God, it's Friday.
I love the way you did that whole thing on prostate and everything and deliberately avoided Blovember. I like it very much. Very, very well.
We have Sumi Valentine, Tommy Dean and Jackie Loeb, who's appearing...
Blovember, because that's where it tends to
Don't step on Jackie Loeb's, you know, promo.
I'm not going anywhere.
Where are you on? Sydney Comedy Store.
Well, I'm on at the Sydney Comedy Store on the 12th of December at the Sydney Comedy Store, and also the 16th of November at the Rudy Hill RSL, and you can visit www.somewhereinrudyhill.net.gov. Please book.
Pleasebook.com. Now, it's the first Tuesday in November next week. We've got a horse race and the US has a presidential election. If our racing commentators got to call the US election and the US election wonks got to call the Melbourne Cup, how would it sound and would anybody notice? Tommy Dean.
Well, I think if the racing commentators got a hold of it, because you know, the racing commentators in Australia are probably the best in the business around the world. They do it all the time. They're very good at it, and I think they'll be quite disappointed. So I imagine, you know, all right, then the horses are pulling into the stalls there, and am I seeing this right, Jack? There's only two? That doesn't seem right. That's hardly a race at all. It really is. I'm checking with the TAB right now. No bets aren't even valid on this race. Now, why are we even racing if there's not a bet that's valid on this race? I don't even make no sense. Anyway, they're off. And they're running neck and neck, and they appear to be looking exactly like the same horse for most of the time. And coming around the outside is a guy that believes in sex after death. That's exciting. Here you go. Coming up the inside is a man that may have been born in Kenya, could have been born in Hawaii, may have been born in the United States. It's hard to tell. Doesn't really matter, because this horse race doesn't count. And they're coming down the final straight, and oh, what's this? A bit of wind has kicked up. They've halted the race. They're just waiting at the final turn. Well, the wind blows through. That's a reference to the being suspended. You guys not cover this on ABC News?
Well, there was some sort of storm, was it?
Yeah, something. Flovember.
That was going to be my big punchline as well, by the way.
Okay. Oh, well, look, it might work better time, second time around.
I don't think so. We go?
Yeah, go.
Okay, here's my attempt. They're off in the 2012 presidential race. All eyes on the favourite, Obama, but it looks like his main challenge will come from Romney after Gingrich and Paul were scratched and Santorum went completely off the rails. Romney has started slowly, probably due to the extra weight he's carrying, $500 million in personal wealth. And as they reach the first turn, oh, Romney has tripped. He tried to say something about poor people and he tripped up badly. Obama three lengths ahead now as they reach the first debate. But here comes Romney. Romney is drawing level with a sluggish Obama. Romney is really showing some brains that nobody thought he had. And it's into the second debate now. And it's neck and neck up to the third debate. And Obama has the whip out. Obama is whipping Romney. He's striding around. He's cracking jokes. Obama has his nose in front. He's charging for the line. But all of a sudden, here comes Superstorm Sandy. Completely out of the blue, no one saw this coming. Sally has blown these two right off course. This might have finished Romney, but he's still battling hard. He's throwing money at everyone. It's Obama and Romney, Romney and Obama, and they reach the finish line. It's Obama by a length.
A prediction. Not only a call, but a prediction. Jackie Loeb, if these two commentary teams got mixed up on Tuesday, what would happen?
I'm going to challenge myself and do it the other way around, where you've got the Americans, say the host of Entertainment Tonight, calling the Melbourne Cup.
Very good.
Well, the horses are neck to neck, and there are allegations flying that one of the little fillies in this race was involved with George Clooney. Race favourite Mal Lucky Day is set to star in the new Star Wars sequel, and last year's winner, Dunedin, is just out of rehab after an addiction to something Lance Armstrong gave him. Americane is believed to be involved in a terrorist plot, and Maccabee Diva is rumoured to be making a comeback, but not in racing. That's right, boxing. Maccabee Diva has been training with Sylvester Stallone, and yes, Maccabee Diva is wearing hair extensions. When not in training, the horses have been seen partying at Crown Casino with several AFL players. And a police horse outside on duty. The casino outside is allegedly suing some of the AFL players for untoward advances. I think if the Australians were calling the election, it would go something like this. Yeah, well, Obama's doing pretty well in the polls thanks to the hippie lefty radicals extremists who believe in public health system. Romney's a pretty good bloke, but he doesn't like women or poor people. But then again, who bloody well does? He plays football and has a hot-looking wife. So as far as I'm concerned, yeah, he's fair dinkum.
Jackie Loeb. Thank God it's Friday. We have Sophie Valentine, Tommy Dean, Jackie Loeb, and our wonderful audience. Thanks for coming. Now, winners and losers of the week. Who were they, Subby?
The loser, for me, I'm taking it literally this week. If you are one of the half of the population, apparently, what's that, 10 million or something, who's buying a ticket in the lotto, what is it, 100 million?
Yeah.
You've got a 1 in 45 million chance. So by definition, obviously, you're a bit of a loser. Sorry to break the news to you if you were, putting all your eggs in one basket.
There's going to be a gambling tsunami.
It's going to be out of control, isn't it? Because that's the day, isn't it? So everyone's going to be gambling on it and the Melbourne Cup.
And the presidential race.
That might be the mistake, wouldn't it? Because somebody might justify putting, I normally only bet $5 on the Melbourne Cup, but I'm going to put $1 million on it because I'm going to win the lottery later this evening.
That's right.
I've got it covered.
Exactly.
And according to my How to Do Accountancy by Australian standards, I'm still ahead.
Yeah, I wonder what the state government's putting on it. It's a cool bill.
Yeah.
My winner was the girl in the States. You see the girl who was bullied for wearing pigtails?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Great story. Did you see this? This girl was bullied for wearing pigtails at school. So what she did is instead of reacting, she wore the pigtails for the rest of the week, got some of her friends to wear pigtails, and then went on Facebook. And it was a bit like tie a yellow ribbon on the old oak tree. And everyone just started wearing pigtails.
Yeah, including one of the teachers.
One of the teachers. Yeah. And it worked really well. And if this had only worked for me when I got teased for my mullet. See? We didn't have Facebook in those days. We could have all worn mullets and I'd have much better self-esteem now. So I had to struggle through with my mullet alone.
Yeah. Maybe that explains the 70s. It was just a Subby Valentine support movement.
People say Facebook's bad. It's a good thing.
Winners and losers. Jackie Loeb.
Well, you're probably anticipating one of us to say, like, the victims of Hurricane Sandy, but the real losers are people that reside in Sydney, because for the next at least 2 or 3 days, we have to put things into perspective and show respect for our East Coast brothers and sisters and show restraint and not complain about lukewarm lattes and the price of bananas and the price of lamb and the carbon tax. No, we can still complain about the carbon tax. The winners of the week are the children of Optimum, Nadia Sulman, who is a mother of 14. She's been removed from the home and put into rehab because apparently she's addicted to having children, and those kids can now live a normal life with their nanny. So I do say that they are the winners of the week.
Tommy, who are the winners and losers?
This may be controversial, but I think the winner of the week, because, I heard a lot of arguments through the week about whether Halloween should exist in this country.
Or whether it was a terrible American.
Terrible American. And apparently it's taken over. England does it as well. And apparently they've added a twist.
It's a Scottish thing.
Yeah, they've added a twist, though.
Celtic, I think. But
look, I know. The origins are there's where it starts, and then there's who made it good. All right? It was just a weird little Scottish thing where they danced around in graveyards, and we said, we need lollies. So based on that, the winner is, and again, based on the Sandy story, is that New Jersey, because it was the storm happened and they couldn't let kids trick-or-treat, They made a government decree to reset Halloween to a new official date this year so that kids could still go out trick-or-treating. Nice. That was fantastic. The losers, unfortunately, were some young English trick-or-treaters who were given cocaine. The loser may really have been about the guy who mixed that up with the Sherbys.
And the parents of the kids. The
Please thank Subby Valentine, Tommy Dean and Jackie Loeb. Thanks for being part of TJF. Next Friday, The Cricket will be on your radio. We'll be back the week after with Gene Kitson, Anthony Aykroyd, Tommy Dean and the cast of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Till then, thank God it's Friday.